Hi, everyone. My name is Tony Gambone, and I want to welcome you to Home Talk Radio with Tony Gambone. And we're coming to you live out of Houston, Texas, and we're producing the show through the Tough Talk Radio Network. Super excited to be on a show today with a special guest that I have. Her name is Debbie Bloyd, and she is from the College Station area, which is about an hour and a half west of where I'm broadcasting live here in Houston. So real excited about that, and we're going to be able to go through a lot of things here on Home Talk Radio, and we're going to talk about things that you need to know about buying a house, selling a house, repairing a house, doing it yourself, I mean, from the start to the end. And I'm really excited about that because we're getting a chance to do this now here. We've been planning it for a while, and we're going to have guests every week here on the show. We're going to be on the air every Wednesday from 4:30 to about 5:30 Central Standard Time. So if you're looking to be a guest, if you have something to bring to the listeners, hey, check us out on hometalkradio.com and sign up to be a guest. So I don't want to waste any time. I want to get right to the show today. My guest, Debbie Bloyd, has been helping clients for over 20 years with their investments, mortgages, and their insurance needs. Now, she's the CEO of DLB Financial Services and helps create wealth and peace of mind for her clients across the country. One of the things that I'm really excited about is talking to Debbie pre-show. We have someone in common that we both know. And for me, folks, this is all about relationship building and allowing people to know more about each other and learning from the experts in this industry how they can better their opportunities coming down the road. So I don't want to waste any more time. I want to bring Debbie up to the show. Debbie, welcome to the show. Okay, let's try it again. Debbie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tony. Thanks so much for having me.
No problem. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today. Now, I read a little bit about your bio, and you know, we have stuff always typed out, and you know, all about ourselves. And what I like to do is I like to find out the inside scoop. First of all, I'd like to find out where you're from originally. I know you're calling it from College Station, but is that where you're from originally?
No, I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay, and what brought you to College Station?
Well, I moved when my dad was in the oil business. He was a CPA, so I've kind of had that 10-key punch in my system for a long time. I then grew up in San Antonio for up through high school. I went to college at the University of Texas.
Oh, okay, very good. So you lived in Austin for a while.
I did. I've lived in Dallas and Houston and Austin. I've done a lot of moving around in my days.
Mm. What made you get into the mortgage business?
Well, I was actually living down in Houston at the time, and I was working for a home builder, and I was doing contracts. I happened to sell a home to a bank president, and he convinced me with my people skills that I would be well suited to talk about money and finance for people, boil down very hard to understand concepts to make it real easy for people to understand. So I got into the banking business and I became a loan officer and started doing mortgages back in 1997.
Okay. So you've experienced a lot of things in the mortgage business that others might not have lasted through with the ups and downs in the last maybe 10 years.
Exactly. When I was started out taking mortgage applications, I think we had basically the same application, but we had about 10 pieces of paper to sign. Today, I think we're up to 58. Things have changed a lot.
It's amazing.
And
at one time, there was everybody was a realtor and everybody wanted to be a loan officer, and then when 2008 showed up, only the strong survived. I mean, that's kind of a cliche, but only really the strong survived. The people that were able to explain it simply, people that were able to build relationships with others, are the ones that lasted. So through that process, tell me one of the things that you really recognized to be better from all that that happened in 2008?
Well, and, you know, I was given mortgages out. We have to give mortgages based on what's available from the lenders. And at that time, there were subprime loans, there were A-minus loans, there were C loans, there was stated income loans. There was a loan for almost everybody. I really didn't have to turn many people down for a mortgage. And because of that, a lot of people were getting qualified for mortgages that really shouldn't have been qualified for a mortgage. Now, that really wasn't the fallout of 2008, but that's what continued to be blamed for the fallout. Those people paid their bills, but they didn't have a cushion. So if they lost their jobs, if the market fell, if they had cutbacks at work, a lot of those people got into loans that they were not qualified for in the real world, and it was hard for them to make payments. Also, the way the secondary market was back then, the way they packaged loans were really not correct, and they were saying things were A paper when they were C paper, and all that caught up with the market in 2008.
So how hard is it to get a mortgage now?
You know, I turn down about half the people that come to me, but it's due to credit issues. Either they have too much credit and they don't qualify because they have too much debt, or they have bad credit because they don't pay their bills on time. They sometimes also have a lot of student loan debt, and the way we have to count student loan debt is different than the way the government counts student loan debt. So because your student loan is deferred, you don't have to count it in your world. You don't start paying on it yet. But in the mortgage world, I have to count that debt like you're already paying it, and it just makes it hard for a lot of people to qualify.
So I know we deal with a lot of different parts of the home industry, and you know, we are buying houses and selling houses, and you know, we have a remodeling business, family owned business, and so I hear a lot of stories, especially since Harvey came along, and you know, I know that you do insurance needs as well, and you know, a lot of people didn't have flood insurance. They never thought they would
That's
ever
true.
Need it. And I'm talking about people that could afford it. And
right.
So how does that work? I know you're not in the Houston area, but when there has been a flood that came through like Houston, you know, the worst in 100 years, supposedly.
Right.
How does that – I mean, that turns the market a whole bunch.
It does.
I mean, I spent 2 weeks – with people that were crying, literally crying every day about what happened to their house, where they lost their whole house. And I found myself crying with them. It was the craziest experience I ever was involved in. But now moving forward, 7 months later, you know, people have gotten back up on their feet and stuff, but they don't think they could sell their house and because of the flood. Now, am I wrong in assuming that in our country, you know, as people are so forgetful of everything except themselves, do you think in a 2-year or 3-year period from now that people moving in from New York and California will buy their house without a problem because the real estate's so reasonable, and they'll buy flood insurance? So the market will be good for them, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. I think so. Flood insurance is one of those things like life insurance. Okay. I have clients that bought life insurance out until they were 80, and they come back to me when they're 78 and they want to buy more life insurance because they're living longer than ever. The good news is they're living longer than ever. The bad news is they're living longer than ever, and they can't get insurance when they wait till they're 80. So these are things, I mean, yeah, homeowners insurance is the same way. There's only out of 100 people that buy homeowners insurance, you may get one house that really has a bad claim on it. So at the end of the year, a lot of people, just like their car insurance, decide to self-insure for whatever reason. That means they'll pay the claim out of pocket. People don't like to waste money. And that money that they could have paid for flood insurance, had they thought it was really going to be needed, they could have eked it out of their budget. The problem is the probability was so low, they didn't make it a priority. Now, when they have the house. One of the ramifications, you know, we all have, I tell my teenagers, I have two teenagers. I have a boy that's 17 and a girl that's 18. And I tell them that all of our actions have ramifications, both good and bad. And so by the ramification of not having flood insurance, it wasn't required. It was optional. It's like life insurance is optional, just like disability insurance is optional. But if you have those things, you're safeguarded. So I just don't think enough people realize what could happen. And that's just what I see in my planning practice. A lot of people don't realize they can have a heart attack or stroke or diabetes or whatever, and they don't take the right precautions, and it makes it really hard. In the real estate world, these houses will bounce back. It'll take time. They'll all have to be certified that they don't have mold in them. They'll have to prove that they've been remediated if they have mold in them. So there's going to be some extra steps to sell a house that's been flooded, for sure. And that's where it's going to take longer. Some people may have to pay cash for those houses instead of getting a mortgage on them if they really need to get a mortgage and it had bad flood damage.
Now, so you are someone who helps people work with their investment, okay?
I mean,
there's mortgages, there's insurance needs, but there's also the financial service. So when when you look at these types of homes like this here, there's a lot of opportunity for people to come and do buyouts. And, you know, so as if, for instance, the insurance company has a house that's valued at $250,000 or $300,000, but the people didn't buy the full amount of flood insurance. They just bought some so they would have it because they never thought they would use it. So people are coming in, and after the settlement happens, offering them the difference. So they might be able to pick up a $300,000 house for $150,000. It might need $60,000-$70,000 to work done to it or whatever it is. That's a good investment for investors. Okay.
It is. So
but
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was going to say, so investors.
No, it's okay. Right. But the thing of it is for the seller. You know, I wholesale houses, flip houses, and do all types of things like that. But I have a remodeling business, so for me, I see the value a little bit differently. But for the what I'm worried about is the people understanding that they're the seller, because their life is in that house. Most of it's been washed away, boxes of years and years of stuff that was just put up in a cabinet somewhere, gone. So they're leaving all that behind. What do you say to people like that? Do you tell them, hey, look, you have to move forward, take what you got, go start again, and get just put that behind you? Or do you tell them, no, stay there, wait it out, and in 3-4 years, your house will be back on the market, and you'll get through it? What do you recommend?
Well, you know, we don't have a lot of patience in our society today. Some people that I know, I did a loan for a couple that everyone on their street flooded but them. And they've been in that neighborhood 35 years. They're not moving. Okay? They have all their friends around them. They're not moving. A lot of people, because they've lost everything, they don't have an option to fix it up. They're going to have to move. So everybody's got a different story. Life has a way of changing our trajectory all the time. And I just tell people they have to be flexible and open to the ideas. You don't want to throw good money after bad if you can't salvage the property. Enough time goes by, not everything can be fixed, especially when it comes to property damage. So, you know, if your house has been flooded and it's a huge loss to you and you can't afford to fix it upright, sometimes it is better to walk away and start over. If you don't have the funds to fix it, if you're concerned for your health, if you're older and you don't have the ability to do it yourself or have anyone to help you, sometimes it is just better to cut your losses and start over. Not everyone is up to the task of waiting it out. It's too this is an emotional situation. Your home is one of the most emotional things you have. I think for most people, their whole lives are wrapped up there. Their memories are there. So asking them to move is really hard for them to do. other people like myself, I've moved probably 20 times. I'm 53. I've moved a lot. Moving to me is not a big deal. But then again, I was brought up that way. That's part of my culture. I think some people have been raised, their children in that house, and they want to raise their grandchildren in that house, and they don't want to move.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I'm that person that says, hey, you know, just get over it, move on, let's go. But at the same time, I was in strangers' houses crying with them after this thing happened. It was nothing that I ever thought that I would ever be a part of. It looked like we were in a third world country. And now here we are 7 months later, and, you know, for 2-3 weeks, everybody was lending a hand. Everybody's forgotten about that,
right,
except the people that don't have sheetrock on, you know, 4 foot around the bottom of their house. And
right,
so
right,
life moves on, right? And so it's kind of, you know, I just got done. I do two shows on Wednesdays, and I do a Christian radio show. And I really believe that God puts us through things to make us stronger later. But it's really probably the hardest thing to understand is you're going through the bad thing that you're going through to be strong later. And who really cares at that point? You just want to get it over with. So
yes,
it's difficult for people. You know, it's very difficult. So moving, knowing what you know, knowing what happened here, I think I heard someone say that if you got relief from FEMA and you didn't have flood insurance, if the flood was to come again and you don't have flood insurance, you won't get help from FEMA. Have you heard that?
Yes. Yes. So the government is there. My opinion of this is the government is there to help you out. But, you know, this is not the government's fault either. Now, to say that, some of the neighborhoods that were flooded because they pushed water out of other areas, correct?
Yeah, the reservoirs,
so,
yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so not all of it was a natural disaster. But part of
right,
being an educated buyer is knowing what's around you and what could happen. And I don't think, you know, the realtors are being blamed, the government is being blamed, all that. And I understand behind the reservoir is a problem. But in general, like, we just had a huge hailstorm come through College Station over the weekend. And Sunday afternoon, for like 3 hours, we were pummeled with hail, golf ball size, baseball size. We knew it was coming on one side of town because we'd heard about it from the other, and people were posting it on Facebook. We put our cars in. We drove underneath overpasses. You know, I put my car underneath a car wash place because I was out driving around. My son, he drove his truck underneath an overhang where the gas station was, so he didn't get any hail damage. But again, that's planning. Some people couldn't put their cars in the garage. They've never been able to put them in the garage, and they're going to have hail damage. Now, insurance pays for that, but what if you don't have insurance? Is it really the government's fault that we had hail damage? I don't think so. It's a personal...
No. Everything is the government's fault. I mean, just go on Facebook. You'll see.
Yeah.
You know, they blame the government for everything. I really believe that it's important for people to be accountable for what they, you know, I said this earlier. I was listening to a radio show, and there was an interview with someone that said that when there's a problem and you feel as though there's a problem, take the minute out and go look in the mirror and you'll see what the problem is. So
exactly,
the choices that we make get us.
Yeah. It's with retirement.
It's true.
With insurance. It's with life insurance. I mean, it's with everything. I see people just failing to plan. My motto is, what is the worst that can happen? And then number two, can you deal with that? Well, the worst that can happen is that I would have a heart attack next year. Do I have enough money, or do I have disability insurance, or do I have life insurance so that I can leave my kids in a decent position and or take care of myself if I have a stroke and I can't recover? That's no one's fault but my own.
Right.
And I have to plan my money accordingly. So I do have disability. I do have a life insurance policy. I do have a critical care policy in case I have cancer or anything like that. So I am taking personal responsibility. Now, can bad things still happen? Sure. But when you don't plan at all, then blaming someone or saying, now I need help, is not the same thing. We all have choices, and some
right,
of us have made not such good choices. And I don't make great choices all the time. I see my clients making different choices than me all the time. But I always try to give them every side so they can think about it, because I really feel that we as Americans take so much for granted. We take our health for granted until we don't have it. And it can change in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Yeah, I always like to say we don't make change unless it's life-threatening. And usually it's too
late.
That's
true. People don't like
change. Because it's already life-threatening.
Right, right. Yeah. People, even people that are, you know, smoking's bad for you, for example. Drinking is bad for you if you become an alcoholic or whatever. So there's things that you know is that you're risking. You've got an element of risk there. You can smoke, but then when you get lung cancer, who has to pay for that? We do as a population. So, I think it comes back to personal responsibility. It's awful what happened in Houston. It's awful that the reservoirs went ahead and flooded neighborhoods. All that is awful. And thank goodness for our churches to step in. And, you know, people came from here in College Station. I can't tell you how many boats left our town. And people from Waco and Dallas drove down to help. I think Texas really bailed Texas out pretty good.
We had an army of boats come from Louisiana, and those people stayed here, and you know, it was just the craziest thing ever, and it really showed how awesome people could be when they need to be. It's just a shame that they flip the switches back and forth. And that's a completely different show, Debbie. I want to focus more on you, and I want to talk about some of the things that you said, because, like, for instance, life insurance. I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease at the age of 19. Wasn't supposed to live past 25. So life insurance wasn't something I was worried about. I was too young to think about it. But now here I am, 62. 10 years ago, I had another bout with Crohn's. And I can't get medical insurance. I can't get life insurance. I can get term insurance at 10 years at a time. But, you know, I always say, well, I'll probably live 10 years in a day. So I had to make a decision on what I could do for my family if something like that happens to me. So I went to a funeral home, and I bought a policy that allowed me to have everything paid for, taken care of, and all done, so my family didn't have to go through that if something happened to me. So I did the best I could with the information that I gathered, right? So I think that people out there that are looking to do investments or mortgage or insurance problems need to get with people like yourself, okay, and learn the information available to make the best decision for them. You might say to them, hey, look, this isn't for you. This is above your availability of money. Your budget won't allow you to have this. Do this. But they won't know their options unless they sit down, not watching something on TV. That's all prearranged for you to just do stuff that they want you to do. But to someone in your neighborhood or someone like yourself that can give them opportunity to understand the different things. You're not holding a gun to their head. I know when it comes to life insurance, people duck and go the other way. They know they need it, but they just don't want to spend – they don't want to face a reality there. You know what I mean? And then when it's too late, they cry. So I think it's important. So my question to you is, do you work with people outside of your area through the internet, through Skype, through whatever, with these types of situations? And I would assume it's in the state of Texas because you have to be licensed for certain things. But do you do that by phone as well?
Oh, yeah. I have clients in Austin, Dallas, Houston, everywhere. Now, in Texas, I'm licensed all over Texas. I'm also licensed in Florida. I'm also licensed in Massachusetts. So where my clients, it's not hard for me to get a different license in a different state. It's really easy once you have a few licenses under your belt. I'm licensed in insurance, in mortgages, and securities. That's a lot of education. And I'm a fiduciary. And what that means for your listeners, Tony, is that I have to do what's best for them, not what's best for my pocketbook and my paperwork. That means I don't sell just one company. When you ask me for life insurance, I'm going to come back with 20, 30 quotes, whatever you're eligible to be accredited with. And, you know, some insurance companies won't write you with high blood pressure. Some will. So if you go to an independent person like myself, we can get quotes from all over. And then you make the best decision based on the money you have to spend. Not everybody can have a Jaguar. Some people need a Volkswagen. And just because you can afford a Jaguar doesn't mean you need to buy one. Maybe a Volkswagen will be just fine. So my job is to consider what available products are out there that would help you, and then find something that fits your budget. My job is to help you. Not, I don't have quotas. I'm independent. I'm my own boss. So my job is to help. I'm a teacher is what I am.
Yeah. And I know people might say, so what does this have to do with homes or houses? And it has a lot to do with it, because when you're when the house is in your name, if you're the husband of the house, or the single mom of the house, when something happens to you, what happens to the house? So you have to make sure everything is in alignment, so that if a flood comes, God forbid, if someone gets in a car accident and they don't make it back home, it's not
right.
Like you can go out and buy another car. You know, so there's a lot of opportunity there for people to learn a lot of things. I want to jump back into the mortgage area for a second.
Yes.
A lot of people ask me about 15-year versus 30-year mortgage. And they said, you know, I always thought that it would be better to get a 30-year mortgage because the payments would be less. And then there's different opportunities of making principal payments and different things like that. But if times came tough, that the 30-year mortgage would be better because it's a lower payment every month. What's your take on that?
Well, what I try to do, there's a software that we use at Fairway Mortgage that allows us to really find out how long you're going to be in the house. Not everybody is going to live in the house 30 years. Some might only live in the house 7 years. A lot of this also has to do with what they can afford. I don't let anyone spend all of their available income. We can't by law, but it's just not sound practice. So if two people are on a loan, I try to make it to where one person can float it if they have to. Then some people, you know, max out whatever they can buy. The deal with the 30-year or the 15 is you can always take a 30 and pay it off faster. I can tell you what the payments need to be made, and you can make that into a 15-year note. You can make it into a 10-year note. You can apply one payment a year and pay that loan down 7 years sooner. So there's all kinds of creative options. But if you get a 15-year mortgage and say, I had a couple, this happened to a few years ago, they were going to get a 30-year, they wanted a 15-year. I told them no, they were entirely too young to have a 15-year. They were in their 30s. We got them a new house. They got a 30-year note. The next year, she was pregnant with twins and had to go on to bed rest. They could have not afforded to stay in their house until she went back to work. So I always say take the 30, pay it off in the 15 or the 10. I can tell you what the payments are, and it gives you a cushion. If you get into a 15-year note and you're unable to make that high a payment, you'd have to go back and refinance and spend more money to get that note to turn into a 30. No one lets you pay a 15 to 30, but everybody lets you prepay loans.
So in plain English, don't put yourself in a situation that's going to cause you to have to make desperate decisions, because we never do good when it's a desperate decision to have to be made. So
we never do.
I like that. Yes. Yeah, and I think it's important that – if you go get a mortgage, first time I bought a house, I was just so happy they would give me a mortgage, I signed the paperwork. And then afterwards I thought, hey, you know what? I could have probably lived in a nicer house for the same amount of money. So I didn't know what I didn't know. And that's why today I always believe that it's really good to find out, you know, you go to the doctors and he tells you something, that's great. You might have been going to the doctor all your life, but I would want to get a second opinion. So it's important
If I can help people make a decision about their finances, I'm happy to do a second opinion. I kind of do what they call a full life plan, where if you were to make decisions about a 30-year or 15, what else do you need in your toolbox that you could be putting money towards that's just not a house? Do you need life insurance to protect that house if one of the two owners passes away. I see that all the time. A man will pass away. The wife will have to sell the house because she cannot afford the payments on her own. There was no life insurance in place. Why not make it a 30-year loan, buy some life insurance, and have both things covered? It's just a different way to allocate the same amount of money that is safer for everyone in the house.
Yeah. And it allows you to have that word that we're all looking for, freedom. You know,
freedom.
If we have a little
freedom
bit of freedom.
I agree.
So, Debbie, I think that you and I could probably talk for a couple hours on a radio show. I'm going to have you back on, and we're going to have to talk about more things. But there's a couple of things I want to ask you. One is, it says here in my notes that you have over 20 years of experience, and you're a book of knowledge. So, and I know I asked this before the show, if you ever written a book, and you said no. And I want to try to convince you to sit down and start thinking about how you can put it into writing to help others. Because, like
you know,
said, we don't know what tomorrow brings.
Right. I've put an outline together. And so when I have a little bit of time, I've got my outline now. I'm going to start writing because I have a website, Tony, that you can direct people to. It's moneystrategieswithdebbie.com. And I write a blog every day. Every day I write something different, whether it's insurance or mortgages or investments. And I'm going to take a lot of those pieces and put them together in a book because the information keeps changing and everybody's questions are different. So the blog continues to change. When I write a book, it's pretty much done. But I think I will write a book this year. I think you've encouraged me to do that, Tony. Thank you for that.
Well, here's the thing. So you've said that you have a blog. Okay, and you write blogs all the time. You already started the book. That's your book there.
Yeah, I just have to put it together. Yes, sir.
I just really think that it's important for people to understand the value that you bring, and with that opportunity, if they see a book, they see an expert, they tend to listen better. So,
come back. You'll be the first one I talk to when I finish the book. How about that?
Girl, I'm gonna come to College Station and hunt you down if I'm not.
Hey, you're fine. Hey, I get down to Houston all the time, so you're just gonna have to give me a time and date, and we'll go out to lunch and we'll put it on the calendar. I need someone to push me to get this book done, so I will get it done. I promise you, before the end of the year, you'll have a book. How about that?
That's awesome, and I look forward to having a lunch with you when you come down, or just let us know when. I want to make sure to ask you one question that I asked every guest. Knowing what you know this year, knowing what's going to take place in your world, what would you recommend people make sure that they do?
I would recommend that they get a budget together and start saving money. They're going to need money for a rainy day. The market is not always going to be this good. I think we're going to have this stock market for about another 2 years, maybe three. Mortgage rates are going to continue to go up. If you're going to buy a house, buy it sooner rather than later. It's going to cost you a whole quarter of a point, I think, every quarter that you wait. So the Fed was going to raise rates about every quarter, a little bit, and that'll make the market go crazy, and that'll also scare people. But know that we're just adjusting. We're finally growing as a country again, and we have to go adjusting upwards. Save more money. Just save more money, Tony.
Mm. Okay, so there's something that I just came across here, and I want to find out. Are you still doing a radio show?
I do. I do a radio show up here in College Station, and I do a show in Tampa, Florida.
And it's called Money Strategies with Debbie? Is that correct?
Yes, sir, it is. Yes, sir.
Okay, so how do we find out more? If they go to moneystrategieswithdebbie.com, they'll get that information. If they go to any of my social media pages, they'll get that information. But how does someone become a guest on that show?
You just call me. Let me give you my number. Now, this number goes to my cell phone, so I don't have a secretary. I have assistants in each of the areas that I'm licensed, but I answer my phone every day. It's with me weekends and nights because I work a lot. So, Tony, my number is 979-220-3018. And you can call me anytime, night, weekend, whatever. I have teenagers. I'm up till 2 in the morning some nights. So please feel free to call. And you can get on the show. And if you have questions for me about your money and finances, I'm happy to help you for that as well.
That is awesome. That is awesome. And I hope you don't mind. I'm going to pass your name around to some people that I know to do radio. That would be a great connection and to build relationships with other people in other parts of Texas as well. I can't thank you enough for taking time out to be with us today.
Thank you, Tony. I had a great time. I got to come back. And remember, you're the first guy to talk about the book.
All right. Well, there you go. you're going to be sorry. I won't forget what you just said. I will be calling you up to find out how you're making out with the book and how I can help promote it.
You got it. Not a problem. Thanks for having me today.
All right. So I'm gonna introduce you to someone who does a show on the same network here, and she's out of Dallas. I'll do an email introduction. You'll be a guest on her show, and I'm sure after you speak with her, you'll want her on your radio show as well. So thanks again.
Have a great day.
Make sure to tell our mutual friend, Regina Rowley, that I was asking about her.
You got it. Thank you so much, and have a great week.
All right. Thank you. Folks, that's the end of our show, and we ran a little long today, but it was well worth it. Listening to Debbie talk to us about investments, mortgages, and insurances, you know, the needs of all of that as you purchase a home, as you live in a home, as you pay for your home, as you raise your family, very important stuff. Make sure to reach out to her. Go to moneystrategieswithdebbie.com and make sure that you learn more, okay? Just ask questions. Do your homework. That way you can make the best decisions available. My name is Tony Gambone. I'm going to be here every Wednesday at 4:30 Central Standard Time to talk more about Home Talk Radio. And I hope that you will take time out to send this podcast to the people you know that could use the help as well. I want to say thank you, and we'll see you next week.